No time for the 305 alarm because it's already past 305. But thank you anyway, Jimmy. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Well, Tom Sawyer, Rush, start out the 3 o'clock hour. I like it. We ended up going long with Twan because we were reminiscing about being like Crockett and Tubbs in Miami Vice driving up to the Rascaler in our Mitsubishi Eclipses. That is such so a funny visual.
I had a Mitsubishi, but I had a Diamante.
Oh, the Diamante was so lame. How dare you? Like, you didn't even, you barely had a Mitsubishi. That was like a boxy sedan.
It was a four-door car.
Yeah, it was a four-door sedan. You're driving around in a boxy sedan. Twan and I had sports cars.
Yeah, Diamante. Made for 16-year-old girls.
Diamante. What, were you taking their whole family to Zaxby's? I'll pull up in the sedan and bring grandma.
You want to hear something funny? The Diamante third gear slipped. But it's still it's crank up. I had a system in the back, so I had speakers and all. But if you got to 28, 29 miles per hour, the gear would slip, and it just But we were on a college campus, and the speed was 15 miles per hour.
You didn't know it. You didn't need to get the third.
So we'd ride around campus in the Diamante, but if we had to leave campus, we had to take my buddy's Wrangler. We'd ride around campus beating the block down. Boom, 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 boom. Hit 28, everybody's making fun of you.
Then I got tired of the Eclipse and got myself a forest green Isuzu Rodeo.
That's a man car.
It was a man's car. Forest green Isuzu Rodeo.
What'd I go from that to a... So I went Diamante to a Ford Explorer to a Hummer. Yeah.
Diamante. How'd you end up with a Diamante?
It was my mom's car.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right. Yeah. Okay, so don't try to make it all hard. You had your mom's Diamante.
Did you hear? You say it different than me. I say Diamante. You see how you just, Diamante, you say it pleasant. I say it deep.
I was driving around on my Mitsubishi Eclipse. The Ticket Wizard had his Scirocco, and we were tearing up the Grove. Remember the Scirocco?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, the Scirocco. I don't even know who made a Scirocco. Who made the Scirocco?
They're out of business right now.
I imagine they are. Yeah. Who made the Scirocco?
You know what? I lied. The Diamante was my second car.
Volkswagen.
My first car.
Volkswagen Scirocco?
Scirocco. Yeah.
My high school car was a teal Toyota Paseo. Now, that was a shoebox.
My high school car was my mom's maroon Buick Skyhawk hatchback that had the floor just torn apart by her high heels.
Or a pout.
And a pout. A pell. It was torn a pell by her high heels. Yeah, the Mitsubishi Eclipse was the first one that I like chose on my own. But yeah, I had the maroon Buick Skyhawk hatchback.
And I remember in my teal Paseo, that, and this, you know, I'm committed to Florida. I'm one of the top athletes in the city, and I'm going to these parties, and I'm always walking down the street, and everybody's like, oh, man, you took the bus? I'm like, no, I got dropped off. I would never pull the Paseo up to the party because now I'm 6'1", 215, walking out of this little shoebox, and I didn't want to embarrass myself. Hey, crowd, you want to ride with me? No. I'm good. I'm going to stay to the end. I'm going to just stay
cardio,
to the end.
Cardio. I want to get my cardio in. I'll walk.
I'd rather say I took the bus than show them my Paseo.
Let's get headlines here because Ian O'Connor, who wrote the book on Aaron Rodgers that just got released, he's going to join us momentarily. So let's get a quick look at the headlines for the 3 o'clock hour.
They're driven by the new Palmetto Ford Truck Supercenter. Why buy your truck at a car store? Palmetto Ford, we know trucks. We're now less than an hour away to roster cut deadline in the NFL. Remember, all the teams have to go down to 53-man rosters. The Miami Dolphins have obviously made a ton of cuts today. The most prominent names, Chris Brooks, running back.
Yeah.
has been cut by the Miami Dolphins. Seems to be a move that would guarantee Jeff Wilson Jr. a slot on the 53-man roster. And Nick Needham, defensive back, has also been cut by the Miami Dolphins.
I just saw that Mark Perry, safety, he was cut by the Dolphins.
By the way,
bad day to day.
Barry Jackson did tweet out that the Dolphins will have interest in bringing Nick Needham back onto their practice squad if he's not claimed off of waivers.
That's good.
But that would be a bummer for him, though. Hasn't he been on the active roster for has he been a practice squad guy?
Not since 2019, no.
I mean,
he got a deal. They gave him some money.
Yeah.
But it's not guaranteed, is it?
Let me see. Because I remember when they gave it to him, I was like, we actually were talking about it. I was like, you know what? That's one of the guys that really earned his money. Like,
right. You know what? I remember you saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he wasn't supposed to be in the league. He willed his way to be in the league. And he was playing. And then, like, that Achilles, too, man. That Achilles is a tough injury.
I think it was 2 years ago, though, that he tore it in 2022 when he tore that Achilles. And then he came back last year and played, but you could tell he'd kind of lost a step.
Did you see Kadarius Toney was released by the Chiefs?
That was coming.
Come on, let's go get him.
I would love that. That's the best thing you said today about this free agency.
I can't catch a pass.
He'll be just as good as Antonio Callaway. Let's get him.
Yeah, well, that is true, but so would I.
Let's go get Kadarius.
Seeing here,
let him return some of these kicks. That would be great for him.
He's offside all the time. You can't have him on special teams. Or was that was a regular play, right? That he was offsides. What was the offsides that caught? That was a regular offensive play. Yeah.
Well, he was lined up at safety. What are you doing?
He was lined up where Mark Perry was.
He was back at safety when the ball was snapped.
That was a game against the Bills. I think it was Sunday Night Football where Travis Kelce just kind of caught like a 6-yard pass and threw it across the field. And
it was and I think it cost me money because I think I had like the Chiefs minus something or whatever. I remember being so mad at Kadarius Toney, but so was everybody who's a Kansas City fan.
Yeah. Very talented. He's going to make some mistakes, though.
Plus, we have a returner, Malik Washington. So, dude's been a baller. He's going to be your returner this year. You don't need to get cutesy if you're Mike McDaniel.
All right.
He lost Chris Brooks. Now he has to attach himself to somebody else. It's Malik Washington.
You're right. You're right. He has picked Malik Washington out of the hat, and that's his new guy.
Yeah, Chris Brooks is a tough loss for me. I'm pretty sure on Game Day Uncensored, I called him a for sure lock to make the 53-man roster.
It's the craziest day when the locker room is today. 80 people around. 30 are gone.
Yeah.
That's like it's a lot of people, and you just see him walking out. And you know, I'm not very good. We saw with Shea when Shea Tabb got let go of the radio.
I was gonna say it's really like every November in radio.
Yeah, I'm not very good at condolences.
Well, I don't think you give someone condolences if they've lost their job. I mean,
yes, condolences.
Nah, I'm not so certain.
It was a sad time.
Sad time, yes. Condolences, no.
Yeah, Crowder, I'm gone. Man, have a good time, bro. I'm going to holler at you, though. Hit me if you get to South Florida. I don't have your number. Man, don't worry about it. We'll get together.
There has been a trade. Tom Pelissero tweets out that the Cowboys are sending tight end Peyton Hendershot to the Chiefs for a late-round conditional pick. That's another I bring that up just to remind people, the Dolphins can make trades right now if they wanted to. So they did it last year. Don't be surprised. I guess my initial thought would be to go shore up that offensive line. I think I told you guys yesterday. Like, if the Dolphins were going to make a trade today, it would make sense to go get somebody else who could be on the offensive line. Because Tua
Taylor
told
Heineke.
You.
Huh?
He said.
Like Taylor Heineke.
Heineke.
Huh. I mean, not for the offensive line, but just to make a trade.
Okay.
You know. who you trading with?
Well, he's on Washington or somewhere. I don't know where he is. He's not. Listen, you don't just give up a Taylor Heineke for nothing. Carolina, maybe?
No, he's in Atlanta. He's in Atlanta.
Atlanta. He's in Atlanta. A numbers game. Numbers crunch.
He ain't going to play. They got Kurt and Michael Penix.
There's a great country show, Stars and Strings, coming to the Hard Rock Live on November 14th. We've got a chance for you to win tickets. Today's code word is music. So text the word music to 20357. That's 20357. And you could win a pair of tickets to see Stars and Strings at Hard Rock Live, November 14th. Message and data rates may apply. Text music to 20357 for your chance to win the tickets.
Yeah, Taylor Heineke on Atlanta. I guess it doesn't matter. Tua said yesterday, doesn't matter who's up there, brother. I get the ball up.
Sling that ball quick. Don't matter.
I'm with you, Solana. I would like some more heavy set individuals in the building.
Yeah, give me the fat guys. I want the fat guys around.
I'm telling you. You don't miss them till you miss them.
Zip out a Pierce in the parking lot, my Mitsubishi Eclipse. I'd be a velvet cream donut across the street in about a half a second. I'd floor that Eclipse.
Y'all didn't love Vernon Carey until y'all didn't have Vernon Carey. I'm telling y'all. He's not. He used to go to that donut place, guaranteed. Big Vern, the donut man. Yeah, yeah. Then he lost a bunch of weight. Y'all see Vernon Carey recently?
I have not.
Yeah, he's thin as a rail.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Asked, was he sick? I said, man, you okay?
Hey, Kyle Orton, you available?
Kyle Orton is 50.
We want Orton.
Kyle Orton could be my father.
Anything else, Solana?
Marlins are in action again tonight. They did lose yesterday 3-2 versus the Colorado Rockies. They'll run it back with the Rockies tonight, 8:40 p.m. from the Mile High. And don't forget, Saturday, UM versus UF, 3:30 p.m. kickoff. You can listen to that game right here on 560 WQAM. Your weather from the DeMesmin and Dover Law Firm. Call them 866-954-MORE, youraccidentattorneys.com. Free consultations 24/7. It is a hot afternoon, a little cloudy as well. That's your weather.
Ian O'Connor is going to talk with us about his Aaron Rodgers book next.
Go crazy, Miami! Go crazy, Hurricane fans!
Hawk and Crowder.
Ian O'Connor's on the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. He's a great writer. He's had four straight New York Times bestsellers. And his new book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, is out. And it's all about Aaron Rodgers, obviously, who happens to be, as I said at the beginning of the show, a fascinating person.
Yeah.
But then when I said that, Crowder and Solana and I, we started to discuss, well, is Aaron Rodgers really a fascinating person, or am I using an improper descriptor there? Like, maybe he's got some weird ideas here and there. Maybe he's a,
yeah.
I mean, not maybe. He is one of the best quarterbacks that's ever played in the league. But I don't, is he fascinating? So let's ask Ian. Welcome to the show, Ian. Thank you for making time for us, by the way.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I guess the mystery of Aaron Rodgers is, why did Nick Saban not take him with the second pick in 2005 for the Miami Dolphins? And that is actually a question I would have loved to have asked Nick. I didn't get a chance to do that. But how that would have changed the AFC East with Brady and Belichick against Rodgers and Saban, and that would have been a lot of fun for a number of years. Didn't happen, of course, but... Yeah, but I think he's a fascinating character, or else I wouldn't have taken on this project. And I was actually down to write a book on LeBron James, and another book on LeBron was coming out, and Aaron got traded into my backyard here in the New York, New Jersey area. So I thought it was a fascinating marriage between an all-time great, really could use another ring for his legacy, and a Charlie Brown-esque franchise in New York City. So that's why I did take it on.
And Ian, I'll let you know, the answer to your first question was Ronnie Brown, who is my kid's uncle, and they call him Uncle Ronnie. So,
and we love Ronnie on the show, by the way. I take Aaron Rodgers every day, all day, over Ronnie Brown, and I think Ronnie Brown would do the same.
Yes, yes. Does Aaron still, like, does he care about that? Does he still, that it can't be a chip on your shoulder now, because we all remember Aaron sitting in that green room.
Oh, yeah, but I don't think he holds a grudge against Miami. It's really more Tampa Bay, because John Gruden called him 2 days before the draft and said, we're taking you if you're there at number five, Tampa Bay. And Rodgers took that to the bank. Now, his agent at the time, Mike Sullivan, knew that might not be a great idea. So what Mike Sullivan did was he called Bruce Allen, then the GM of the Bucks, and he said, hey, Bruce, by tomorrow night, Friday night at midnight, I need you to call me and tell me whether or not you're taking my client, because I know now that the 49ers are not taking him at number one. And sure enough, before the Saturday draft in Manhattan, New York City, Bruce Allen called Mike Sullivan at midnight on Friday and said, we are not taking your client at number five tomorrow. So that's why Aaron fell to 24, and that was the first NFL draft reality show, the humiliation of Aaron Rodgers. Now, that humiliation as a whole has created a giant, not chip on his shoulder, but a boulder that he's carried through his entire career. And I think that was the driving force behind him becoming a first ballot Hall of Famer.
What about for this season, for us Dolphins fans in particular, because we'll face him twice as long as he's healthy, what kind of quarterback do you think Aaron Rodgers will be for the Jets in 2024?
I think he's going to be a good quarterback, Hawk. I think he's not an MVP-level quarterback anymore. Obviously, he won that award four times. But I think at age 40, he's turning 41 in December, you can't ask him to carry the team for 17 games. That's just not doable. But I do think he can play at a high level, maybe be a top 10 quarterback in the league. To me, the Jets, it's going to be interesting. The Jets and the Dolphins and the Bills in that division, it's to me, the only thing that seems certain is the Patriots will be the last place team at the end of the year in the AFC East. But I think that he'll play at a high level, maybe go 11-6. And he's just got to stay healthy. Obviously, that offensive line has improved. That line has to stay healthy. And given the weapons he has and Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall next to him in the backfield, I think 11-6 is feasible. And I think if he misses a few starts, like I suspect he will in the middle of the season, Tyrod Taylor is a good backup, could win two of those three games. So I think the Jets are in a fairly good position.
And Ian, you've been covering this thing a long time. With the Jets, that's because everybody talks about the AFC East. They talk about the Bills, Josh Allen, you know, losing Stephon Diggs. They lost a bunch of defenders as well. The Jets are the people who scare me. So you even brought up Breece Hall and Quentin Williams, who I think are – I mean, Garrett Wilson, who are two of the best young offensive players in the league. But Quentin Williams, Quincy Williams, C.J. Mosley, Sauce Gardner, like the Jets might have the best roster in the AFC East.
They might. And listen, I'll certainly, you got to respect the Dolphins are in good shape at the two most important positions on the roster, really, head coach and quarterback. And I think the Jets defense could get better with Reddick if they ever get him in camp. I don't know if that's going to happen, but Reddick is more of a game breaker or just a guy who can wreck a game, really. They're a good defense, a very good defense. I don't know if they're a great defense. Hassan Reddick might make them great. So that would really behoove them to get that thing done and get him into camp. So, but I think the AFC East is going to be fascinating because I think those three teams outside of the Patriots, everybody's going to want to go 2-0 against New England and probably needs to win that division. But it's going to be a dogfight. And, yeah, I think if Rodgers stays healthy, the Jets have as good a chance as anyone to win that division. I think you could say the same thing about the Dolphins and really the Bills, who should be down a little bit but not too much. So it's going to be a fun season to watch. I think Jets fans are having a hard time really embracing the idea that their team can win the division because they haven't done it since, 2002? And also after the disaster of last season, four snaps in, they're just it's a fatalistic fan base to begin with. But what they experienced last September, they're just having a hard time buying in this year.
Yeah, we all experienced it with them. We watched it. Everybody, I mean, down here, maybe the reaction wasn't doom and gloom. So, Ian O'Connor, the book is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. I find this fascinating. Let's say someone has a preconceived notion about Aaron Rodgers and they read your book. What are they going to come away thinking about him? Because he's had, in my opinion, one of the more fascinating heel turns. He was like kind of like All-American. Everybody rooted for Aaron Rodgers. And then all of a sudden, the COVID vaccine started to rub people the wrong way. And then he would go on McAfee and people started to and it's like he's also, like I said, fascinating with Jeopardy and stuff. Like, but he's had this weird heel turn. When you finish the book, what are you going to think about Aaron Rodgers?
Most people have told me that they like him a little bit more than when they started reading it. And I think it's clear that those four words, yeah, I've been immunized, when he was asked in August of 21 if he was vaccinated, changed his entire life. And that's the heel turn right there. And media commentators who used to really praise him for being on the right side of social issues, like Colin Kaepernick, he supported. He actually is one of the few white stars in sports to say out loud for the record that he felt NFL owners were keeping Kaepernick out of the league because of his protest. Aaron rebuked a fan for shouting out an anti-Muslim slur during the national anthem. President Obama wrote him a letter thanking him for doing that. So he was considered one of the good guys in the NFL. And then all of a sudden, COVID hits. He said what he said. 3 months later, the truth comes out that he wasn't vaccinated. And that really changed everything. And he decided to dig in against the media onslaught. And I think you add in the conspiracy theories, you add in the Jimmy Kimmel thing, and all of a sudden, you have layers of Aaron being sort of this villainous figure in the NFL. I think this book brings out the good guy again, some of the goodness behind the scenes, the acts of kindness and generosity that his friends told me about. And his marketing agent with CAA, Ed Berry, who's Saquon Barkley's agent, told me that he wants to publicize some of the good things he does behind the scenes to counter the negativity, and Aaron won't let him. He said he's a frustrating client to have in that regard. So some of those stories I bring out in this book, because I really think what I try to do is paint a balanced picture of the quarterback and the human being.
So when you say, you know, the publicists want to publicize some of the good stuff and he won't let them, is it because he's leaning into this role of heel? Because some people find that they enjoy that. They've never experienced it before. And then all of a sudden they lean into it and they enjoy it.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I also think he doesn't think it's all that important to publicize those things. And you know, once in a while, and generally speaking, Aaron does not respond to much. I mean, he's been ripped left and right for 3 years, and a few things like the CNN report on Sandy Hook, that conspiracy, he had to respond to that. So if he has to, he will. But a lot of times I find he lets things go. And so whether that's leaning into being a villain and deciding not to contest things. And then on the other hand, he at times he fights back. I will say this. He is a fearless public speaker when he does speak in the public arena. And most of us are not. I'm not. And I do think sometimes he's defended or tried to indefensible positions. And other times, yeah, there are, like, for instance, I think this just got out by happenstance, but there was a dying boy who went to Jets camp last summer. And the father told me the boy's name was Braylon Hodgson. He was named after Braylon Edwards. And he had a rare form of cancer of the brainstem, and he was dying. And the father told me that when he brought his son to Jets camp, he assumed, after reading about Aaron Rodgers for the last 3 years, that he was a jerk and he might not even say hello. Well, Aaron spent more time with that kid than anyone at Jets camp, showed him true compassion. And the boy died on the morning of September 12th, the morning after Aaron got hurt on September 11th, and he was holding Aaron's jersey when he passed away. So there are just a lot of stories like that that Randall Cobb told me. He flew across the country to attend his son's 3-year-old birthday party. Like, how many people would do that? A lot of acts of kindness and charitable acts that are not publicized, and Aaron just doesn't really feel that's necessary to do that. And so you have a real complicated figure that I think that this book helps figure out a little bit, that the good guy who was there and was being praised a few years ago is still there underneath the criticism. It's just been lost a little bit the last 3 or 4 years.
And Ian, as I just hear you talk, like, as you did the research and you talked to his teammates and you talked to, you know, people that really know Aaron and know the situation, was it an evolution? Because it sounds like he's just a kid, like we're saying, when Hawk was saying it earlier, where you look at him as this, you know, young guy that just really can spin that thing. Like, he can throw the ball, and then you see him turn into the villain and he kind of embraces it, but he really doesn't, because he spends time with, you know, with fans that, you know, have, you know, problems or whatever it is. Like, Is he rebellious? Did the money change him? Does he love the fame? Because I look at Aaron different. I'll be honest. I look at Aaron different than I did when I played against him.
Hey, I'm just curious, Channing. How did you look at him when you played against him? Because when I interviewed players around the league who played with him in Green Bay and then, of course, with the Jets, I found like almost universal respect and almost admiration. And yeah, a couple guys like Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley said some critical things about him. But I ran into a longtime NFL official who told me that he hated Aaron Rodgers, this guy in particular. He said, but I have to admit, I've never met an NFL player who doesn't like him. I'm curious what your take was as an opponent, what you thought of him.
Loved, respected his ability, didn't love it. We actually beat him in 08 when we went to the playoffs and beat the Jets with Brett Favre and all to win the AFC East where they had a chance since 02. But
yep.
playing him, like you respected him and he – I don't want to, like, Phillip Rivers was over the top a little bit with, like, the antics he did in the backfield. But if you rushed Aaron Rodgers and you almost got to him, he threw it, like, he turned and be like, yeah, you thought you had me, didn't you? So from the outside, and I'm not friends with him, but from the outside, like, I respected him. I kind of liked him, and I never thought that the turn would have happened like it did 3 years ago. And when it did, like, I was thinking, that's why I asked the question, like, was it the stupid fame that got to him? Was it the money that got to him? Like, it seemed like it was a change, but the media might have caused that change over the man causing that change, and now we're just looking at him through that microscope.
Well, I'll say this. His former agent, Mike Sullivan, told me that after Aaron won the Super Bowl, things changed. He decided, I'm at the top of the mountain now. We're going to do things my way because I have been misevaluated and under-evaluated my entire football life. Going back to high school, when he didn't have one scholarship offer out of high school, he got 1310 on his SATs, and he had to go to a local community college because nobody wanted him. And then, of course, he fell in the draft. He got booed by Packers fans when they drafted him. Brett Favre did not treat him well those first couple of years. The fans did not want Aaron to take over the franchise. And so when he won the Super Bowl and was MVP of the Super Bowl, he decided going forward, we're doing things my way from now on. So I think that was part of the transformation. But really, the COVID statement 3 years ago, I asked him, I said, Aaron, why didn't you just tell the truth that day? Like, your truth was you were allergic to an ingredient in Pfizer and Moderna and concerned about Johnson & Johnson side effects. Why didn't you just say that? Because I think you would have gotten less than half the criticism you did get by misleading the public. And then when the truth came out, you got destroyed. And he told me, effectively, yeah, I should have. He admitted he made a mistake. He said, I gave critics something they still have on me today, and I regret that. I should have told the truth. So I at least commend him for admitting a mistake because Aaron doesn't often do that. He doesn't often say I was wrong, but he did in that case.
Ian O'Connor is with us, and the book is called Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, he didn't want to get injured, you know, four plays in last season, but is he happy that he made the decision to leave Green Bay and go to New York?
Yes, Hawk. I think it was a great opportunity for him. Now, he had to change the dynamic in Green Bay because it was one bitter postseason defeat after another. And unless there was a dramatic change, it was just going to continue. He needed to break up his career. And here's the New York Jets. They haven't been in the Super Bowl since January of 1969. And it's New York City. So I'm going from the smallest market to the biggest market with a chance. If I win a ring there, it's going to feel like three rings or four rings. Brady's at seven, I'm at one. I'm never closing that gap. But a championship in New York at the end of my career is going to dramatically enhance my historical standing in the sport. So to me, it made all the sense in the world to do it. And I think he's still happy he did it. Obviously, the injury changed a lot of things. I was in the building that night, and I have to say I've covered sports in New York for almost 40 years. And that is the most heartsick I've ever felt for a fan base and an athlete. And I actually drove his parents home that night. And that was a very difficult, somber drive. He's obviously been estranged from his family for 10 years. But it's still their flesh and blood. And that was a real difficult experience that night.
Is he a great teammate? Because there's good guys, there's good, you know, teammates, there's good leaders. But then there's guys like you said, you told the story about him flying across the country for a teammate's you know, three-year-old birthday party. But if you talk to the current guys, like you said, other guys like myself just played against him, like, he's a cool dude. Is he a great teammate? Is he that guy in the Jets locker room that you're like, yes, all the Garrett Wilsons, the young guys, the Breece Halls are like, without him, I wouldn't be as good as a player as I am.
Yeah, I think he is, and I think a lot of Jets fans told me that they watched Hard Knocks last year, and they kind of thought Aaron was a jerk at first coming into the market, just given the coverage the last 3 years. And then they saw him on Hard Knocks, the way he interacted. Now, granted, he knew the cameras were there, but the way he interacted with his teammates, the way he was a leader, the way he talked to defensive players and in practice pulled them aside, hey, I saw you do this, and this is why I did that. And he's been great in New York so far with his teammates. They swear by him. I mean, it's almost scary the way they talk about him and revere him, and guys saying, like, everything we heard coming in about Aaron really has been disproven. So the old Packers I talked to, and again, two guys, Jermichael Finley and Greg Jennings, have said some negative things over the years, but they've said a lot of positive things too. And I talked to Jermichael about it, and his son is like Aaron's his favorite player. His son's a top college prospect now. But yeah, I would say 98% of the guys I interviewed, and I interviewed a lot of them over the years who played with Aaron, had really almost nothing but positive things to say about him, including going back to his high school and junior college days, same thing. So I would say that's real. That's very real and not something that's just a sort of something for players to say because it sounds good in the media.
Ian O'Connor, the book is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Everyone should read it, especially as we go into football season here, and especially with Aaron Rodgers being in our division. You mentioned LeBron at the beginning of the segment. Who is a fascinating guy that you want to write a book on? Like, who, obviously Aaron Rodgers, there's enough material and there's enough layers to write a book like this. Who else is out there that you have your eye on?
Well, I still may want to double back to LeBron at some point. Tiger Woods, I covered his entire career, or the vast majority of it, and I feel like there's a Tiger book inside of me on his legacy now that his career is effectively over. At some point, I do want to do a non-sports, a major figure in whether it's entertainment or politics, and just haven't settled on it yet. But I would say, like, for sure, Tiger at some point I would like to tackle because, frankly, doing this for decades, I've probably been more amazed by what Tiger could do with a golf ball than just about anything else I've ever seen, including I covered a fair amount of Michael Jordan, particularly the years he was facing the Knicks in the playoffs. And I would even include that, to be honest with you. Tiger was maybe the most I know a lot of people don't think golfers are athletes, but Tiger might be the most amazing athlete I've ever covered.
Wow. So you're saying Tiger was better at his sport than Michael at his sport?
I'd say they were equals. Wow. And I don't know if you guys play golf. It is the hardest sport, I think, in the world to be very good at. I understand.
Crowder's hit a hole in one, or at least he says he has.
Well, Hawk doesn't go outside, Ian, so yeah, there's no golf in him.
No, I mean, there's nobody better than Michael. I would never say that. But I would say Tiger's is equal. I'll say that. I mean, it's just, I understand you need more athleticism and physical talent to play basketball than golf, but what golf requires of you mentally, and to see him dominate that sport the way he did, I'd say this, it's a tie. How about that? And LeBron's right there too. But you can argue LeBron is the greatest player of all time because he ended up with more points than Michael, more assists than Magic, and more rings than Larry Bird. So that's a pretty good resume to have if you're making a case as the greatest ever.
And then quickly on the way out, is your, like, what you do, you're a best-selling author of multiple books, but what you do is really, like, get into the nuts and bolts of a human's life. Is it hard? Because I know some of my friends, if you went to ask them questions, they're going to probably cuss you out.
Yeah, it is hard to win their trust. But listen, I've watched NFL games on the sideline. It's not as hard as what you did for a living because I have the ultimate respect for the men who play in the NFL. And I don't think fans have any idea the speed and the physicality and violence of the game. For you to do that and then 7 days later do it again, or even if you're playing a Thursday night game, I have no idea how in the world you can do that. I mean, so that's harder than being an author. And I played 7 years of low-level football, and I thought I had an idea of what it was like until I stepped on an NFL field on game day. I had no idea. So I will turn that question back to you, and I think what you did for a living is a lot harder than what I do now as an author, even though that's very hard.
I mean, Crowder was just getting ran over by Frank Gore. I mean, what? How hard is that? Anybody can get ran over by Frank Gore.
Tore it all, Vicodin and Hennessy.
I remember when Channing got Rex Ryan's attention. I do remember that.
That was a great battle between two great sound bites. I mean, Channing and Rex Ryan. You want to talk about Tiger being the greatest at what he did and MJ and LeBron. I mean, Channing and Rex Ryan for sound bites leading up to a big game. You can't find many better than those two.
I might not make a tackle, but I can talk. I can talk, Ian. I can go now.
You did both. Yeah. Very well.
I appreciate you, brother.
Ian O'Connor, we appreciate the time. Everybody check out the book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. It really is fascinating, as I said, to start the entire segment. Thank you, Ian.
Hey, gentlemen, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Ian O'Connor, New York Times bestselling author. Really does seem like a fascinating person.
Gore has a hole right side. He's at the 15, 10. Frank Gore, touchdown! Miami wins! Frank Gore scores a touchdown, and Miami has beaten Florida State.
Hawk and Crowder.